is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Meadows radio show, number 284 in the series. This session of the radio show shares my conversation with Franklin Public Schools Superintendent Sarah Ahern. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. In our conversation, we talked about the school budget for FY 2021 and the decision process. What does school look like in September? Still a lot of questions around that. Remote learning is in place to close out this current school year. And graduation planning for the June 5th high school graduation is underway with details to be finalized. Links to the key webpage references we make are included in the show notes. The recording runs around 42 minutes, so let's listen to my conversation with Sarah.
This is Steve Sherlock for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM on the internet, and 102.9 on the Franklin radio dial in the Franklin area. Today, we're joined by Superintendent Sarah Ahern. Good morning, Sarah. Thank you for joining.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to participate in the radio broadcast.
Indeed, and it's been a bit, but I know you've had quite a full plate dealing with the multiple issues that you've got on your plate with the schools and the remote learning, and oh, by the way, there's a budget thing too.
Yeah, it's been a very busy spring, and the entire closure of school has really thrown a monkey wrench into pretty much every operation of the school department. And so we are making just tremendous adjustments regularly because of the closure. It really has been quite disruptive.
Yeah, because remote learning, as I recall, even a few years ago, was kind of a pilot here and there for additional classes or something. But to spin around an entire set of teachers, facilities, and all the students and parents to just remote learning on the dime, that granted, you've had some issues, but it's just amazing that you've been able to accomplish as much as you have.
Well, thank you. It's been, largely a credit to our staff and our administrative team and the students and families themselves as well. This has been truly a team effort, and, thank everybody for their patience and feedback along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes two to tango, for sure. And I assume you've been finding some break times in your busy schedule to make sure you maintain some of those, reinforcements, get some of that social emotional break so you come back to the well and then be refreshed to tackle the next change, whatever is coming at you.
Yeah, I think there's been fewer opportunities of late. It has been, like I said, a really busy spring, but I do try to carve out some time with my family, particularly on Saturdays. We're getting a lot of walking in and seeing a lot of getting onto some nature trails, which has been a nice outlet for us all. And like many people, experimenting with new recipes in order to kind of pass the time and I guess, share something together, as a family.
Yes. Yeah. The family time coming back to basics has kind of been a recurring theme in a lot of my discussions. So yeah, it's good to see that happening.
Yeah. We've done 4 puzzles. Just completed our 4th one yesterday.
1,000 piece or 500 piece?
This was 1,000 pieces. This one was 1,000 pieces. But the way it was set up, it actually was a really fun puzzle to do because it came together. It was very rewarding. It was very rewarding.
My daughter and her husband had prepared both grandparents because we had our first grandchild in February. So we haven't been able to hold him since March. So we've been doing remote distancing. But as part of the redecorating the room, they gave each grandparent set a puzzle of a park, national park cover theme type. So we did that puzzle, and then as the room got redecorated, it's now set up so that Thomas will be able to get that outdoor feel and eventually start hiking, et cetera. But he's only 4 months, so he's got a ways to go.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. Very sweet.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been fun. A little challenging during these times, of course. Sure. The withdrawal symptoms, you can't hold them, but we totally understand. So
yeah.
Health is important.
Absolutely.
So I think the major pieces we started talking about what we should discuss here, one of the themes through this, clearly, is the budget. And you and the school principals and the school committee worked through your process beginning, back September, October, I remember some discussions. There was a budget workshop even, I think, in January before this all stuff happened.
In terms of our budget timeline, we typically have a budget workshop in the fall in October, and we did that with the outgoing school committee. And that sort of sets the stage for budget development, which begins kind of internally with building principals and central office administrators talking to their staff, talking through school councils, and putting forward some recommendations related to site-based budgets. And we make some projections about some of our cost drivers, like salaries and tuitions and transportation, among other things. Health insurance is a big one.
Sure.
And we did have a budget workshop with the newly elected school committee in January to kind of kick things off there. And the governor's budget came out a few weeks after that, and that's what we had been basing our budget on all spring. And that is what the town's budget currently is based off of as well, are the governor's budget projections from January. But right now we are also learning and hearing more about big challenges for the state in particular in terms of the state revenue this spring being much lower than would have been predicted and forecasted based on the coronavirus closure. Mm-hmm. And its economic impact. So, yeah, we're in a difficult spot. We knew that we would have a budget deficit coming into this point in time, the finance committee meetings, and a gap to close. But by all accounts, it is likely to be worse once the state budget gets set. We anticipate some local aid reductions coming from the state.
Yeah, one of the bright spots in an otherwise kind of sea of sad news on the FinCom hearings that I did participate in last week, at least from a town perspective, the revenues that they had anticipated through April, the majority of those had actually been received. So clearly this hit, you know, the pandemic hit certainly in mid-March. So you lose kind of part of March, April, May, and June. So it's the last quarter. Mm-hmm. But at least through April, the town had gotten what they had anticipated for revenues. Obviously, what was going to happen in the rest of 20, because this is fiscal year 20 to complete, still remains to be seen. They'll be watching that closely. But yeah, the bigger issue is getting into the FY21, you know, what starts July 1 going forward. That's some of the forecasts are from the state level. I think the first number they had shown was like about a $4.5 billion shortfall, and that's been revised the wrong way to a $6 billion shortfall. So by the time that replicates through, it's going to be really challenging for sure.
Yeah, most districts are bracing, I think, for a 10% reduction in Chapter 70 or school-based aid. And so we've projected that to mean that we have a $5.5 million gap to close. That's just an estimate. That's not a number that has certainty, but it's a number that we want to be thinking about and planning for just in terms of some of our timing with respect to the budget. That's, again, not the decision or question that's before the Finance Committee. The Finance Committee is looking at the town administrator's budget, which has the school department with a $3.5 million budget gap. But those, again, are based on the governor's budget figures. And Jamie Helen has been pretty forthcoming with the idea that adjustments may need to happen later on. The problem for schools is that it's very difficult once the school year starts for us to make adjustments of that magnitude at that point in time. We need to have more certainty going into the school year with respect to personnel and budgets for resources. And we also have some contractual and statutory requirements related to notifications of people perhaps not being renewed or reductions in force. And those dates are coming June 15th. So
right.
We have a time frame that's a little bit different, and that's kind of what we're working towards at the current moment.
And for background for the readers, listeners, clearly the town council will approve a line item that has a total dollar, which FinCom will then recommend to the town council. But Jamie's already provided that one line item. And the rest of the detail of that, whatever that dollar amount is, that's totally your responsibility and school committee responsibility. The town really doesn't do much more than that one line item, giving you some funds within which to, you know, to work with.
Right, right. And so the school committee will be having some discussion at the next several meetings related to what adjustments to our line items we might be looking to make as a result of the budget gap and having to close it, some of which has already been discussed. So we have identified and updated some of our budget figures based on the ability to apply additional revolving funds based on FY20 expenditures, mm-hmm. Which, you know, as a result of the closure, in some places our expenses are a little higher, in some places our expenses are a little less.
Right.
And we do have some additional revolving funds we can apply to next year. There has been federal funding called the CARES Act. Mm-hmm. The magnitude to the schools is $123,000 approximately, which is designed to help pay for, it can actually be applied pretty broadly, but it is designed directly for coronavirus relief to school departments. We are looking to prepay some of our out-of-district special education tuition, which is allowable by state law for 3 months. And that's a practice that other districts do. We haven't typically done it. So that is another opportunity to kind of reduce the overall gap coming that we have to face. And we've made some adjustments to the teaching and learning line item. We've suggested adjustments there in an effort to try to keep the impact away as best as possible from the students and teachers in the classroom to things that are more curriculum and professional development related. It's difficult though. I can make a case that everything in the school department's budget is going to ultimately impact students. And at this time, we've got some additional challenges with remote learning, adjustments to make to our curriculum, and certainly professional development needs of teachers in order to be adapting in this new way.
Sure.
And we anticipate that we'll probably have a bit more remote learning or hybrid learning or relying more on technology again in the fall. By all accounts, I think school's going to look a little different. We don't know exactly what that will be, but we need to be planning for that. So the overall putting the budget together this year is particularly challenging. We're just trying to make the best, I guess in any year you try to make the best forecast you can with your budget, but there's a lot of moving parts this year.
There are. And having seen over my years reporting, I think it's approximately 80% of your budget, well, the school budget is effectively personnel. So there's not a whole lot of leeway to make some real significant changes with that other 20%. So to the extent that you can, then clearly that helps protect kind of the staff personnel line, which I know you've always wanted to keep protecting, because clearly
yes.
That's one of the key drivers for the success of the rest of the operations and achievements, et cetera, from the school perspective anyway.
Yeah. And I think some of the reductions that that have happened over the past couple of years have been enrollment driven. And so we have had some enrollment driven reductions. We keep a close eye on our kindergarten numbers in particular, in mm-hmm. terms of the number of students who are coming in at kindergarten. We did an enrollment forecast back in February, and that's, I think, been really helpful to understand and share with the community about the enrollment history and then also the enrollment forecast going forward. One of the major assumptions of that forecast was that the economy would stay stable, there would be no impact to housing markets and mortgage values. And
geez, that's one major assumption. That just went right out the window.
it really did, very quickly. So a lot is still to be determined with respect to the impact on our enrollment. But the demographer would say, and I have talked with him since the February presentation, since the closure, would say that our enrollment forecast is likely to be less than what was forecasted back in February. And we'll do in the fall, when we see what our enrollment actually is, we'll do a little bit of a review and look back. Mm-hmm. You know, we have had some enrollment reduction across the district pretty evenly across the district, and we're expecting enrollment to stabilize at the elementary level, decrease within the next 5 years at the middle school as smaller classes come into the middle school,
right.
As well as decrease probably most significantly at the high school as smaller cohorts of students move in each of those classes. And by move in, I mean matriculate through the grades. I don't mean moving into Franklin necessarily.
So
we're expecting that drop to be seen overall and to continue for the next 5 years, and then to kind of stabilize after that. And that is important information to keep tabs on. I know at the finance committee meeting the other night, there was a discussion about the perception, I think, that there's a lot of growth in town and that the population is increasing in town. From a school-based standpoint, we're not seeing an increase in the number of school-age children. And the demographer talked about the overall population in Franklin, and there's perhaps as single-family homes turn over, that new families will move into town. And that is one of the assumptions that the forecast was based on.
Yeah. I remember when that had first come out, that was one of the, there was a couple, I think there was 19 total assumptions. One of which certainly was the economy would stay the same. We know that hasn't. The interest rate for mortgages was another key factor. Clearly that at least facilitate somebody getting a mortgage to buy a home, because that's generally what's going to happen. The other one that I think, at least from my understanding, and certainly I'm not a demographer, I'm just a guy who has fun with numbers from time to time and certainly can watch trends and figure things out. But the rate of turn of the existing housing needed to be a particular number. And given what's going on, yeah, I would think that wouldn't happen. And thereby, the numbers that they had forecast us getting to, I think it was a kind of a new normal around 4,500, 4,600, probably won't be reached in the time frame they perspected or projected. While Franklin seemed hot to trot a few years ago that we were going to go by 35,000 into 38,000, 40,000, that doesn't seem to be happening. We're kind of losing the population as the base kind of stagnates here. But we'll see what happens as this new world continues to evolve.
And I've heard things that people will leave cities and move out more to the suburbs because of population density, and some people making that prediction. So I think there are still some things that remain to be seen. But Franklin's not unusual. I think that there are lots of communities in Massachusetts in particular. I think certain parts of the country are experiencing this more than others. But my understanding is that Massachusetts is one of, in the Northeast, is experiencing kind of an overall decrease in population, overall decrease in school age population, I should say, to be more accurate. Other towns are facing similar questions and doing some similar studies. And we see it, I think, too, in higher ed. There have been some local closures of higher ed institutions.
Yeah, higher ed definitely has a bigger issue. I think the demographics in, 2026, really showed that for that point, you know, some number of colleges that we all know and think are around may not need to be there because that population is just disappearing from a higher ed perspective. So I know our representative, Jeff Roy, has been working at the state level. He toured all 29 of the state higher ed institutions, community colleges, the UMass, et cetera, et cetera. I participated with 1 day's visit into Worcester, and it was just an amazing experience to see that and to have him go to that level of detail to prepare for this. I think it's certainly foresight, and it's going to be real requirements in terms of preparing, because at that higher ed level, you know, people are expecting in some cases to go to this or that school, and that school may not exist in 6 years.
Right. I know he's really concerned about making sure that schools are making commitments to students so that they can carry through their education. All the talk about the enrollment forecast has me thinking about another report that we are pulling together, which is related to our facilities.
Right. That kind of goes hand to hand together. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we, you know, recognizing that we have a reduced population, we are also working with an architect to take a look at our capacity of our facilities, comparing, you know, what the possibilities are for space utilization versus how they're actually currently being utilized and at what rate. And the architect from Castle Booz shared some initial data with the school committee a few weeks ago. I think it was at the May 12th meeting.
Yeah.
And took a look at the facilities K to 8 and looked both at utilization now, projecting it into the future based on the enrollment forecast, and then also kind of considering I think he called it educational adequacy. So comparing each school building, and this included all 6 elementary schools and the 3 middle schools, each school building for, you know, against a bit of a checklist of standards of kind of modern educational spaces.
Right.
And so that's some helpful information that I think is going to be important for the school administration and the school committee in the future, thinking about kind of some long-term planning around space usage and space needs. You know, overall, I think there are places where there is schools that are being underutilized because we've lost population, and you know, some might say being underutilized. But we also do have some space challenges. There are a couple of schools that are more utilized than others. Kennedy still has modular classrooms that need to be taken down. They're, you know, close to the end of their life expectancy, and so we need to make plans for relocating the classes that are in those modulars. And then, you know, naturally, as we think about the fall and what the next school year is going to look like, there's some considerations we need to make about space use in light of social distancing expectations.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are a lot of big questions related to that. So the facilities report is helpful there. And it's part of the closing study that the school committee has undertaken this year. We have the facilities analysis subcommittee has met several times to kind of help guide the process. And it's part of the school committee policy to study the prospect of retiring a facility. And this closing study is related to the possible retirement of Davis Thayer. But at this point, I know that there's a lot of talk in the community about where we are with a possible decision. And at this point, the school committee is still evaluating and gather. I shouldn't even say evaluating all the data. They're still gathering data.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
You know, certainly evaluating it as each step kind of comes along, but they're still gathering data. And although the architect presented an initial report, a more thorough report is due in June and will be shared with the school committee. The facilities analysis committee subcommittee, just like after the enrollment forecast, would be looking to share that facilities report in a broader forum, kind of as a follow-up, so that it's not just a one-time conversation at the school committee meeting, but that there's an opportunity for follow-up with the community, which is something that we had done back in March for the enrollment forecast. And that's something that has been on their radar screen as part of the process.
Yeah, because I think for those listening, as the example, certainly Davis Thayer was built in 1924 as a high school, and it's being used now as an elementary school. Clearly, since that time, the educational requirements for what a high school needs to be, we can now see in our new, relatively new building. And we've had, not so much very recently, but we've the rest of our elementary school buildings are fairly newer than Davis Thayer. So they've still been built towards that, then current standards, because they're continuing to evolve. And the real big wrinkle as you start getting into is like, okay, well, what is social distancing going to do to that for September? But at least the analysis that you will have is kind of this is where it is now. This is what we know now. And then you'll at least have that level of detail to then layer in whatever the social distancing requirements come out as.
Yeah. It is helpful information to have, and then to have the architect guiding us with respect to how many students are appropriate for a classroom of a certain size in this world of social distancing has been helpful guidance as well as we make plans for the fall.
Right. And I don't know if you've heard anything more closely. I know every once in a while from Governor Baker's updates, some of the reporters, I guess, in the audience say, well, what's DESE doing? Where's their next step? Do you have anything closer in terms of what their next release is going to be in terms of September? I know you're waiting on the edge for it too.
We're expecting some information mid to late June, which is a little frustrating because I think we'd like to take an opportunity to have it now and to do more concrete planning based on guidance. But I do understand and respect just how much time this all takes for planning. And the Department of Education has put together a pretty broad group of individuals. I think there's something like 40 people, superintendents, school committee members, parents, experts in the health and safety field, as well as representatives from the two statewide teachers unions to make some plans for the fall. And so we're expecting their guidance and report to come out mid to late June. And in the meantime, while we wait for that, we are undertaking some of our own planning so that we can be sure that we're putting orders in if we need to, or as we need to, for PPE in the fall, that we are thinking about some of the things that may need to happen with respect to retrofitting some of our facilities. And going a little bit deeper than kind of the operations piece, we are also needing to think about how are we going to measure where students are, where are their skills coming in the fall, and we anticipate that it's going to be a much broader range among students than we otherwise would have expected. So how are we going to assess their learning skills and their needs coming in? And first and foremost, just welcoming them in with open arms and reassuring them and, addressing more of the social and emotional aspects of the disruption that we've all been through, and kind of collectively coming together to heal, really.
Yes.
And begin the healing process, which is hard to do in this remote world. So those are all things that are on our minds, and we're busy too with trying to close out the school year. So it's kind of hard to do both at the same time. But we're, we have to be doing both. We have to be thinking about what the fall holds in store.
Yeah. That little bit of spare time just disappears when you got so much on your plate. That's for sure. But having been in the education environment for a number of years, and certainly my wife had been teaching kindergarten for a number of years, that first, call it 4 to 6 weeks, you know, assessing the incoming class, and it'll vary somewhat from K through to, you know, the seniors of the high school, but assessing, okay, this is what we need to do. They already know this is what we need to cover in terms of whatever the curriculum is for that grade. But then, to your point, assessing, well, what did they miss that they were supposed to have done before coming here? And then how do I incorporate that? And that may be, you know, a variety amongst, call it 20 students, could be five here, five there, who knows where they are across that spectrum. That the incoming assessment and then adjustment, you know, the teachers have gone through the challenge doing learning remotely. They're going to have almost a bigger challenge just assessing where those students are for that grade coming in to get them somewhat caught up. I don't know if we even have some educational stats that can say, well, this is what it'll take. I don't know if we've had anything like this before.
No, we've certainly not had anything quite like this before, but we do have some structures in place that I think are just only going to be relied on more and more in terms of catching the kids and, and meeting them where they are and bringing them along. We're going to need to rely on smaller groups for instruction versus whole class instruction. So our teachers will be working closely with our math and literacy specialists. They'll be working with their team teachers at the middle level and also department colleagues, I think, a lot more going forward in the future to assess where skills are and then collaborate together on meeting these diverse needs. We also have interventionists at our elementary schools, and between the literacy and math specialists, the classroom teachers, and the interventionists, relying on those folks to break the kids up into smaller groups based on skill development needs. And I think that you know, we're positioned to kind of leverage a system that we already have in place. We're just going to have to do it at a bigger scale.
Yeah. You're certainly going to be forced. Not, certainly you always have wanted to get to an individualized instruction. You may almost need to get to that point in September, depending upon where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think this is really pointing out the importance of what we've been striving for in terms of this idea of personalized learning. It's been a bit of a goal that we've had in the district improvement plan for some time. And this is highlighting, you know, exactly why we need to be in a more personalized learning place. And it's going to be more important now than ever.
And then as part of kind of closing out the remote learning for this year, I believe there's also schedules being finalized in regards to both teachers getting in to kind of clear out, clean up the classes, as well as students getting some of their materials. And hopefully there won't be too many science experiments in the lockers discovered along the way.
Right. We are a little worried about that. So to close out the year, we do still have teaching and learning happening through the instructional blocks. The teachers since early May have been focusing on priority standards, the areas that are most important for students to be familiar with going into the next school year. So it really has kind of helped prioritize curriculum and instruction. So while they finish up with that, there are also logistical things happening to close out the year. We have teachers going into schools to clean up classrooms, as they typically do at the end of the school year. And then students will have an opportunity to gather their materials as well. And in some cases, K to eight, those materials will be packed up for them, and families will be able to come by and pick up student materials, not this coming week, June 1st, but the week of June 8th.
Okay.
Mostly. I think the high school's on a slightly different schedule. And then that would leave the last week, I think it's the week of the 15th, for some of the fifth and eighth grade celebrations, as well as a preschool celebration, which unfortunately have to look a little different this year. But, you know, we are trying to do our best to kind of honor and recognize that students have a transition to make from one school to the next, between fifth and sixth, eighth and ninth, and then perhaps pre-K and K.
Sure.
And that these transitions are happening. So we want to bring an element of closure. So there's some virtual ceremonies as well as a very brief kind of face-to-face celebration that is being communicated out to our fifth and eighth grade parents. And we're kind of modeling that a little bit off of graduation and the high school graduation planning. We want to make sure that the high school graduation is the ultimate in terms of a special event for the high school graduates who will be moving on to their post-secondary plans.
Yeah, and I know Franklin TV, radio, I'll be part of that day somehow. Final plans still be determined. But I think as we started talking, I think that instead of just having the ticket to the gymnasium to sit, watch the graduation, the community should have more of an opportunity with the three different parade routes summing up, coming to the high school during Friday afternoon. And then, effectively the video, pre-done in appropriate sections, adhering to all the social distancing requirements with the graduation ceremonies individually, and then the various speakers, that'll be up for broadcast and then replay Friday night.
Yeah, it's amazing to see what's coming together. There is still some planning happening. We usually start planning graduation months ago. Mm-hmm. So we've had to, not only have we had to pivot the entire system to remote learning, but everything has had to change.
Right.
And we've had to adjust. And so, we typically start planning graduation months ahead of time. And especially when you have somewhere on the order of 430 graduates, it takes even that much more time and effort and work just to be thinking about graduation plans on that scale.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes it spectacular and exciting at the same time. But you captured it pretty well. There's kind of three components to this graduation. There are individual diploma ceremonies happening earlier in the week, which will be captured for video. And we wanted to hold those to make sure that each child and their family have a moment to be honored and recognized and celebrated for their accomplishments.
Yep.
And we're modeling that off of something that we had seen in another there was a newspaper article that a couple parents had shared with us about. We had a lot of ideas being shared with us about different ways that we could be doing graduation. So that was one of the ideas that I think Franklin is taking to the next level,
mm-hmm.
because of people like you and Peter Fasciano and folks in the media world who are kind of helping us commemorate it and capture it over the course of the week.
Right.
So that's where we're starting. And then, yeah, on Friday, June 5th, which is the traditional date of graduation in Franklin, it's always the first Friday in June, will be the car parade of graduates as the graduates make their way through three parade routes within the community, which you're right, will provide an opportunity for community members to celebrate and recognize our graduates through town. Really kind of helps disperse the crowd, keep people safe. People can wave from their porch and celebrate in the graduates on Friday afternoon. And we'll share more information with the community about that
mm-hmm.
as the week unfolds. And then, yeah, the virtual ceremony will be broadcast Friday evening for graduates and the community to watch. We do have to adhere to all of the appropriate social distancing. So there are some pretty tight controls on what we're able to do for graduation. Really want to thank Kathleen Liberty at the Department of Health, some of our colleagues at the Franklin Police Department and Franklin Fire Department, in addition to Franklin TV and Franklin Radio, for the collaboration and support and help. Everybody is really pitching in and really excited to honor and celebrate the graduates. We do have plans, they're tentative plans. We're hopeful and optimistic plans of being able to get the graduates together in the summer for yearbook distribution and a celebration where they can be more together than just the parades in their vehicles.
Right.
We do want to provide them with that opportunity, and more details will follow. We're still not 100% sure that the health data will support that, but the Department of Education came out with, actually it was the Department of Public Health that came out with guidelines around summer celebrations and summer graduations, and how you might be able to do that in this world of social distancing and health and safety. So more details to come on what a summer celebration looks like. But we're pretty excited about what next week holds for the students.
Indeed. Yeah, it should. I can just visualize what the outcome will be, and it should be good. Not as it would have been, but, you know, under the circumstances, it's making the best of it.
Trying to, yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Good. Well, thank you for your time. I think we covered a bunch. Did you have anything else you want to add before we close up?
I think we covered, you know, a lot of the big things that are happening at this time for the schools. And so I don't think I have anything else to share, but would encourage people to follow our meetings, the school committee meetings and the subcommittee meetings. I think in this world of Zoom and Google Meet, the work that we're doing perhaps is a bit more accessible to folks. And, you know, I would encourage people to tune in and watch the meetings or join the Zoom meet to participate and, you know, be part of these conversations, because there's a lot of important questions at hand.
Yeah, I've said in other places for other Franklin Matters readers and listeners, but if there is any time to be involved in the budget discussion, this time in my 14 plus years of doing this, this is the time. There's so many decisions to be made, and there's so many still unknowns, and respectfully, you and the school committee cannot do it alone. You need some of our input. So we need to be there and at least, you know, help you, support you in whatever way we can.
Thank you. It's well said.
Well, thank you. Have a good rest of the day, you and your family. And then I'm sure we'll be across one of these Zoom meetings or Google Meets as we go forward. And then we'll see what happens and keep in touch.
Absolutely.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.